And we are back right now. Lady Chi, Mike, and Meg are basically missing at the moment. You know, like in Special Edition 7, we seem to have lost their calls. Maybe we'll get them back. Maybe we won't. But I'm back with Jen, with Kira, and we have two very special guests right now. Aspen is here with us, and her beta, who has done a remarkable job on Year Like None Other, whose name we discovered in soundcheck I cannot pronounce. So we will refer to her as The One. It's either that or she's a car brand. I can't help it.
I can't do it either.
Mercredi. I can't. Was I close?
Just say Mercredi. Don't try to do the French R.
Mercredi?
Mercredi.
Yeah. Mercredi.
I'm writing that down on a piece of paper. Oh, wait, Aspen, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
We're doing pretty well tonight. Thanks for joining us tonight. Thanks for writing.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here.
And as I frequently say, thanks for writing the damn story, or else for the last 11 weeks we would have been talking about aluminum siding installation or something like that. So,
well, I wrote it so you would have something to do. So that's good.
She's a Slytherin. She plans ahead.
Oh, that's one of my questions.
I'm sorry, Jen. Jen emails me tonight. Do you have any questions for Aspen? I'm like, well, yeah, I was thinking of possibly, saying something during the interview. She's like, I have a series of 20 questions I prepared. I'm doing more now.
Essay questions, right?
I'm like, Jen, it's like an hour and a half here. Okay, Jen. So,
Mercury's short on time, so we're going to ask her things first.
Yes, we are. And just to clarify for everyone, tonight I will be the traditional, hey, Aspen, how are you? Here's a question I just thought of interview guy. And Jen will be the, that's Aspen, I want to go over and touch her and see if she's real interviewer.
You are embarrassing me.
It's so true, though. It's like when Rob from Spellcast stops by, Jen.
You just get so excited. I can't help myself. Why are you meeting all these famous people?
And just to clarify too, just real fast, because we haven't done this in the last couple episodes, we kind of just said, hi, this is Kira, and didn't really tell you who Kira was. Now, Kira, you are a beta for Aspen on Summer. That's correct?
Yes.
For Summer. But you weren't involved with the writing of Year? Is that?
No, unfortunately. I did not even discover Year until well into Summer.
Okay, and Jen, I know that you help Aspen, here and there with Summer, but you also had nothing to do with the writing of Year. You were just a huge fangirl.
Right.
Okay, so just wanted to clarify that we're divided between the fangirls and the fanboy. Okay.
And Mercredi, on the other hand, had a lot to do with the writing of Year, because it's not really correct to say, oh, well, she was the beta, because she did help me beta for a long time, but then she started writing sections of it, too.
Was that closer to the end? Because I noticed that in some of the later chapters, that it was written by Aspen in the Sunlight and Mercredi. So
I started putting her name in the author credit when she started writing sections of it, yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, I think that was the point where I actually started writing, chunks of text.
Okay.
Whereas before, I was more so just kind of a co-plotter.
Okay. Because that's
a fantastic editor.
Okay, you know what? Let me even do this, just because I know we only have Mercredi for a very short time during this interview. Jen jumps in with her questions that she has, is there anything you guys, especially you, Mercredi, want to just say? I know you've been listening to these episodes, and usually there's, when I listen to episodes, I'm not in. I'm like jumping up and down, screaming things at the at the computer.
At Jen, usually.
Usually at Jen, yes.
I think that one of the main things for me that I would like to point out that I think would probably be interesting in the context of the shows that I've heard is one of the main things that has been the ongoing debate is how much the characterizations flow with canon. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is very unique about the situation is that I've never read any of the books.
Really?
Right.
Really?
I've not read any of the actual books. And looking back, I'm really glad of that, because I beta everything and look at it from the perspective of, do the characterizations work in this story, and not necessarily, comparing them to what J.K. Rowling wrote.
Wow.
Wow, that's awesome. I didn't know that.
And that's actually, and I want, I promise I'm not going to monologue too much during this because I want you guys to talk a lot. But one thing that we actually talked about in the earlier part of the episode airing tonight that you guys haven't had the chance to hear yet is that one thing that we looked at near the end of the story was that you could argue this is a story about three people who had really crappy childhoods, who had a lot of problems in their lives, who kind of came together and found each other and formed like an ad hoc family unit. And you can name them Harry, Draco, and Snape. But you don't. They don't necessarily have to be those characters. It's you could have written an original story around original characters, but the fact that you put it in the Harry Potter universe made it appeal to a lot of people that may not otherwise have seen it. But it was one of those types of stories where you build off of the canon versus one of the stories that you know is very loyal to the canon and where the canon was going. So I just thought that was interesting because we were talking about that last night.
And I think that's true.
Well, I didn't know where the canon was going, but I was pretty sure it wasn't going towards Snape knocking Harry.
Okay.
Although I was sure that Snape was a good guy at heart where it counted.
True.
Despite all the evidence to the contrary. Go on, Merrick.
I'm all with you there.
Merrick, what were you saying?
Oh, I was going to say, and also really with the exception of Harry, none of these, the characters, the other two main characters were kind of a blank slate as far as their background.
True.
In canon.
That's a true point.
Right, so, because pretty much at the end of book five, we still didn't know any of this stuff about Snape's father or that he was a half-blood even. That wasn't clear when I started this. So I was inventing a whole backstory for him.
What did you think when you found out that he was actually a half-blood? Were you laughing?
You know, well, what I thought was that I had read an article by someone about 2 or 3 years previously where they had argued that they were sure he was a half-blood, and I had remembered at the time I'd laughed at that.
I have a question.
Oh,
when you
no
saw
way,
when you saw Half-Blood Prince was the next book coming out, did you stop and think, no, there's no way?
No.
Okay.
I never crossed my mind that referred to Snape. Honestly, it didn't. But when I saw that Snape really was a half-blood, the first thing I thought was, dang it, that person was right all those years ago. How did you know this?
Well,
that's awesome.
I have a question for Merrick Ridley before she has to leave us tonight. The first story that we covered on Parfic Weekly was After the End by Arabella and Jenya. It was a collaborative written by two authors, and we had one author who was with us during the entire podcast series, and then we met the other author during the interview at the end. And you know, Jenya, who had been in contact with us, would always say, oh, I didn't do this. Arabella is the genius behind everything. And she's the one, I do very little around here. She's the person you really want to talk to. So it was interesting to then talk to the other person and hear the real story. So Mercury, we're going to be talking to Aspen after you have to go tonight. What are some things that you want us to know that she may be too humble to say, or that, you know, you just want your own experiences working with her or putting the story together? What do we, or what should we know that you think would be of interest?
I would say that, first of all, I don't know where she finds the energy to produce the material that she does. I mean, you know, she has a full-time job and a family, and I don't have any kids. And during chunks of the time that we worked on this, I wasn't even in a job, I don't think. And yet she always has way more time and energy. It's like, you know, we'll talk about an idea IMing each other, and then the next day she'll email me, you know, just pages and pages of text. And it's like, when does he have time to write this? When does this woman sleep? So
I don't sleep. You found out. That's the secret.
And so that's one of the things that's always just amazed me about Aspen. And the other thing that's always amazed me about Aspen is just the consistent quality of everything she writes and her ability to take anything and just make it flow. For me, that is not one of my strengths. Not to be overly braggy here, but I'm pretty good with plotting and I'm pretty good with bits of dialogue. But as far as making everything all flow together, I'm extremely lazy. And I can, you know, it's like we'll come up with an idea. It's like, okay, I'll work on this. And so I'll give her a chunk of information or maybe a few scraps of dialogue, thinking it's like, well, you know, my writing style is so different from hers. How are we going to make this work? And she will just work her magic on it, massage it, and it all sounds like it came from her pen, which is something I could never do.
Jen, you are the fangirl with 400,000 questions. Why don't you jump right in?
Well, I remember being on the Yahoo group years and years ago. And it really, I'm thinking, has it really been at least 5 years since the fix was started?
I think it might have been four.
It might be four. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's been five.
It's been a long while. But I remember seeing Mercury on the Yahoo groups all the time. But that was when every new chapter came out every Tuesday. And I know that's how I got into the popularity of it. When we were trying to, like, y'all would put out questions of what do you think is going to happen next? And people would write in, I think this, and they'd make little chapters, that kind of thing. But anyway, how did the two of y'all meet? How did y'all get together to start writing together? How did you find Merc to start?
She found
debating?
Me.
The other way around.
Well, because we met in a different fandom.
Yeah.
Oh my God,
oh, really?
This is like every answer we always get is we met somewhere else.
What fandom did you meet?
In Vampire Chronicles.
Nice. That's awesome.
I was writing some stories for Vampire Chronicles, and Mercury was, I think, a moderator on that site.
She
invited me over to... She says, I know this community where a lot of Vampire Chronicles fans, you know, get together and post their stories. And she invited me there. And then, you know, we just got to know each other that way.
Wow. That is so awesome.
And it was kind of natural for her to be the beta for this story because she and I were both reading some of the same Harry Potter stories. And, we were both very interested in the idea of Snape being a father to Harry, either through Severita stories or through adoption stories. And I was chatting to her one day about the latest chapter of one of these stories. And I really, really liked the story, but I said to her, you know, I think Harry has more severe psychological problems and it would be harder for him to accept becoming someone's son. And she said, well, if you think that, you should write your own Snape adopts Harry story. Do you remember that, Mercury?
I vaguely remember that, and of course, I knew when I was doing it. I knew I was just poking you with a stick because I just knew something like this was going to happen.
And I remember 96 chapters later.
I answered her right back. I said, "There's no way I had time to write my own." And then I went home that night, and the idea had just so captured me that I had chapter one done the next day.
Now, let me ask you this question. Yeah. Well, in the beginning, when I found out it was 96 chapters, you know, my eyes kind of bugged out of my head. But then I read chapter one. I'm like, oh, I see. These are bite-sized chapters. And then I'm at chapter 50, and I'm like, I have to quit my job to keep reading. Let me ask you this question. Like, obviously, you said you sat down and you wrote chapter one. Now, chapter one to chapter nine, like a huge journey in between. You can't tell from the end of chapter one where this is going. Like, what? I know this is one of Jen's questions because, you know, it's number 281.
You're a question thief.
Yeah. Yes. how did you put this story together? Like, what was did you start with a small idea and then branch out from there? Or did you see the ending and then work back to the beginning? Like, how did this story come together?
I didn't plan it ahead. The only thing I knew when I started it was, somewhere down the road, Snape is going to adopt Harry, and I'm going to work my way towards that, and I'm not going to let Snape adopt Harry until I really, really believe the character would actually do that. And as long as it took, you know, that's as long as it was going to take. I didn't have a grand plan about how to get there. The only other thing I knew for sure was that Voldemort would snatch Harry at some point, and Snape would be the one to rescue him. Other than that, everything was developed as I was writing it.
Really?
Now, I will say this, though. Now, that was when we first started.
When we first started, yeah.
But that's not to say that the huge chunks of plot didn't materialize as we went. I would say we probably knew virtually everything that was going to happen by the time, I would say probably, it's been so long ago. I was trying to remember this morning some of the details of, you know, when this happened, when we decided this and who decided what. And it's really fuzzy at this point. But I know that there was definitely a point, I would say at least halfway through the story, we knew everything that was going to happen.
I think maybe halfway through the story, we knew all the main plot points.
Right, all the main plot points. And then there's so many subplots. There were lots of subplots that came up later. Like, for example, Knot. That was something that we hadn't planned ahead of time. That came up very kind of spur of the moment.
Oh, and one reason, Ryan, why the story is so long.
Is it long?
Is because...
I didn't realize.
Because Mercury and I would be chatting, and she would make an offhand comment. You know, I think I remember this one, Mercury. She'd say things like, you know, I really think at this point that Draco would be very angry at the Slytherins, and he'd do something to try and get revenge against them. And it turns into a 3-chapter diversion.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
And I'm the one who was responsible for things like the whole sidetrack into the needles.
Okay, at the end there. Okay, we got to that in the last episode, which is preceding this one tonight. But we did get into that a lot.
Yeah, so. I don't want to spoil anything.
No, not at all. Well, people who are listening to this already heard that. But did you mean the podcast, or did you mean spoil things for future stories?
For anyone.
Okay.
And yes, for future stories too. Because that said, we do know all the major plot points of Brothers in Arms.
Except we might rename it, though. I mention to you I was going to rename it?
You didn't mention it, but whatever. I've never been totally in love with that title anyway.
No, I'm not totally in love with that title. I think I'm going to call the Year 7 story A Family Like None Other.
And keep with it.
Oh, I like that.
I like that.
Well, I have to say, Aspen, it beats the title I came up with for you. So...
What is that?
The year after the year like none other.
Well, you know, we were joking.
We joked about this.
We did joke early on. Remember, we were kind of calling it like the year like none other, except kind of that one year.
I was thinking like that. Another year like none other, except for the one before.
Exactly.
And I was actually trying to work out the acronym in my head for it. Like
the year that was kind of like last year.
But, you know, I really did want to keep with the like none other pattern of the titles, but until recently I hadn't thought of one for Year 7 that I liked. But then I thought of A Family Like None Other, and I think that might be it.
I like that one.
I
love
that
one
better.
I do too.
Yeah, so probably that's where we'll go.
Was it Brothers in Arms?
I was
going to
announce the new title.
Was Brothers in Arms a working title at one point?
Brothers in Arms was a working title, yeah.
Well, I'm really into the Mickey Rooney, Judy Garland movies right now, and I just finished watching Babes in Arms. And so it makes me, like, every time I think of Brothers in Arms, I go back to, like, Strike Up the Band type movies. And I don't picture it. So I like The Family Like None Other.
Jen is very happy. Happy birthday, Jen.
The only thing wrong with... Brothers in Arms, I mean, the biggest thing wrong with it is what I meant to say, is as soon as I had announced that title, I wanted to, like, whack myself in the head because it telegraphs that both brothers are still around, you know?
Oops.
And that might spoil it for people who haven't got to that point of the story yet where they would know that anyway.
Yeah, I remember...
You know, because Draco was in some danger during Year Like None Other.
Right, and we had already announced that title, and I remember the kicking of ourselves.
Oh, I wanted to kick myself so hard because people were coming on the Yahoo group and they were saying, but you said that A Summer Like None Other would be heavily focused on a Draco romance. It's not a ghost romance, is it? He's going to live. Oh, shoot, I gave it away. I should learn not to do that.
Whoops.
Okay, I've got to go soon. So any questions?
K- Kiara, Jen.
Your favorite chapter, Mercury.
Oh, God.
The one you like writing the most.
But, okay, wait. Let me just mention this, because I just have to say it. That whole owlry thing was such a nightmare.
Really? It was and horrible.
Oh, God.
We almost died trying to solve all of the wrinkles in that.
That was so Mercury, hard.
She went back and she looked in close detail at all the seer dreams and every little hint of information that related to the owlry. And she wrote me this massive document with kind of like a flow chart of possible plots to how we could solve it.
I had
masterpiece
scenarios.
Of logic. Oh, yes, she had all these different scenarios.
What could have happened?
To explain all the backstory of everything, and I swore to her, she knows I've broken this promise since, but I swore at the time I would never, ever write another seer dream because it was so hard to make every detail match what happened later when, as you know, the seer dreams always match kind of a warped interpretation compared to what Harry
Potter
did.
We're always trying to fool the reader, so to speak, but at the same time, you have to have it happen verbatim.
Right, and we spent a long time trying to solve that key. You know, what exactly was the backstory on the key Harry found that he assumed was his key? And it was really difficult to make it all line up perfectly because it was not planned in advance in that level of detail.
And that's one of the things that's a big stylistic difference between me and Aspen is that I am a planner. I like to know time. Where things are going, and Aspen likes to just kind of write by the seat of her pants. And I will admit, there are times, and this has actually definitely happened, where I had an idea for what I wanted to happen way in advance, but I wouldn't tell Aspen until we got closer to that point, and then I would start lobbying for it because I knew she wouldn't want to think about it too far in advance.
Plus, I wouldn't remember. I'm great at forgetting the wonderful things that she's given me for 40 chapters later. I can't remember them when I get there.
So let me get this straight. You write a story about, you know, Severus Snape, who's a Slytherin who plans 400, like, you know, steps ahead. but you're writing by the seat of your pants.
You kept saying, why wasn't I in Slytherin on the forum, you know?
Yes.
Well, maybe that's why. I don't plan ahead like that.
I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, what the hell is she doing in Ravenclaw?
She took a very Gryffindor approach to this thing.
Oh,
I don't know. I think that's part of what makes it so impressive after hearing that. Like, how do you possibly remember everything? And, like, your plots are, like, entwined. I love, it's like a Draco line, plots within plots. Like, I don't know how you keep up with it all.
Well, I have a question, Merc.
We did a lot of rereading.
Merc, do you have to get going, or do I have time?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, I'll stick around as far as I can. It's just a job.
I like to hear that.
What does that make her? That's Gryffindor.
That's a Gryffindor. That's a Gryffindor true and true. Join our forum. I'll send you a link. Well, here's my question. What, like, you said the owlry was your biggest nightmare, you know, in terms of writing it. Was there anything that, looking back on it now, you think that, you know, you had a grand idea and maybe it didn't work out the way you planned, or you, or something maybe no one's ever caught, or just something that you, like, just the one part of the story that, like, I'm not sure what the question is here.
I have a great answer for that.
I don't know what the question is, so shoot.
I've said it on the forums. It's not a secret. I was writing in this open-ended style so that I could decide things at the last minute and the decision would still be open to me. So the best example of that is Draco. When I worked Draco into the story,
that's true,
I left everything ambiguous. And I showed it from Harry's point of view, how it all could have been some big long-term trick to get into Harry's confidence, and Draco could have betrayed him. And I kept that option open to myself all the way to the chapter right before Christmas, when Draco finally confessed he'd been at Sam Samhain, we should say. That's how you're supposed to say it.
Thank you. We needed
that.
Thank you.
You didn't know that Draco was
going to be alive. Yeah, but right up until then, I was considering making Draco actually be a villain instead of making him be Harry's brother.
totally
different. By that point, I already knew that I was going to fight you tooth and nail if you decided to change it at that point. Because I was kind of reluctant to bring Draco into it at when we first had him. It's like I knew he needed to be addressed as a character. But then once, it's like when, I think the point where he was living with him, I was kind of like, what? Wait. He's going to be lit. Well, you know, this can't turn into a story about three people. It was a story about two people. But she quickly sold me on it. And then it's kind of like I got to that point along with the readers. Well, it's like, well, now I'm in love with this character, and she better not make him bad.
Well, see, I haven't sold myself on it completely because I was keeping that option open. And then what finally decided me that he had to be good was Snape had such confidence in Draco. And if I had made Draco turn bad, it would mean that Snape has very bad judgment. And I couldn't do that. I didn't think Snape would have bad judgment, so that decided it for me. But this is what made people on the forums say, Draco was an afterthought to his own author. And wouldn't he be offended by this, being Draco?
Makes me feel sad.
This. I don't have any regrets about the story thus far, but it will be interesting when we get around to year 7. And I'm not going to spoil anything, but I will
reveal. No spoilers.
I'm not going to spoil anything, but and Aston probably knows what I'm going to say.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know exactly
about.
What I'm going to say.
I know what you're
going to
say.
Major
plot development in year 7.
That we have been fighting about for months.
I don't see it the same way.
So are you leaving it open-ended until you decide whatever that plot point will be?
It's like, finally wore me down.
I
convinced her as to the merits of the case.
Actually, though, I did it I made you bribe me, remember?
Oh, I think I do remember. But you're going to have to remind me the details.
Exactly. It's like, fine, if you're going to do this, then you have to do what I want to. So I threw
in. You know, I can't remember what you wanted, but I'm sure it's already worked into the plot.
It's already
now we're planning way ahead.
Well, let me ask you this. Will it appear, like, when we're reading the story, will it look like almost like a fork in the road? Like, two different ways the story? Okay.
Well, I don't know about it looks like a fork, like two different ways the story, but it is such a massive event that I think it would be hard not to know what we're talking about when you get there. It's not written yet, of course.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I have a guess, and I've been right 82% of the time, so I'm not saying anything.
Yes, Mr. Garden Gnome. Candy was a garden gnome.
Okay, there was 18%. Listen, 18% of the time, I am slightly mistaken. 82% of the time, I am a genius.
Oh, you know, the comment that I really loved, that I loved so much, it wasn't you. I'm not sure who made the comment, but someone said they were just really upset because they knew that Dumbledore was going to die because he, quote, always dies in stories like this.
Oh, yeah, I remember that comment.
No, that was...
Harry had a chance for a good talk with Dumbledore before the man died.
I thought,
I think they have a really, really good talk, but he's not going to die. So.
Yeah, I think that was, I think Lady Chi said that, and I actually thought she gave away the ending, because then she quickly changed and said, oh, I don't remember if he dies. So I thought she gave it away and was covering.
You know, if she had read the whole thing and said that, I don't know why she would have said it, though. So maybe she hadn't finished reading then?
Maybe. I don't remember. I think it was an offhand remark, and then she took it back right away. So she probably realized she was mistaken, but I thought she was covering
up. She made you think that Dumbledore was going to die, though.
Yeah, she made it. She made me think she spoiled it, and I went, oh, wait, I must be thinking of another story. So
Ryan, like, Dumbledore's going to die?
And Pansy's a garden gnome?
Pansy's a garden gnome?
And I actually, you'll hear this from earlier in the episode, when I was reading the chapters right up until the podcast last night, and I'm typing to Jen my thoughts on developments in the late 90s.
Jen is laughing hysterically.
And I'm like, and I meant to say Goyle's dyslexic, and I wrote Goyle's anorexic?
You're wrong. And I was like, what?
No, we didn't go that way with Goyle, no.
I'm like...
I think they're pretty... Wasn't Goyle having dyslexia?
He's really bad at it.
I think Doyle having dyslexia was one of Mercury's contributions.
What's that?
I really liked it. It made him human. I love that.
Do you think that was your idea?
I think it might have been. But honestly, at this point, with few exceptions, I have a hard time remembering what was my idea and what was yours.
Well, and that's true, too, because the way we would work.
I remember, but yeah, a lot of them.
Somebody would throw out a tidbit, and we'd develop the idea together.
Right.
And then it's hard to remember who had the germ of that idea, you know?
Right.
We're a good
team.
Okay,
I gotta go.
All right,
Mercury.
I'm so sorry, Mercury. Nice to talk to you.
Just as I knew, Lawrence, how to pronounce your name, you know, you have to leave us. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, Kira, you've been kind of stomped upon, unfortunately, earlier on. Why don't you take the floor? What questions do you have? What comments do you have?
Oh, my big question I want to ask is, well, this is such a psychologically driven story. Did you know how you're going to solve everything? Or, I mean, I know that you're, you know, writing it as you're going along, kind of, but did you know how to fix all of their little problems? Or did you have to do a lot of research on that?
This is the part where I hate to say the truth because I don't know, I think I disillusion people. But I don't know if I did any research on psychology. I just wrote everybody's reactions. The way I would write, I just felt like I was channeling that character, whoever I was dealing with. And I just tried to make it be very real how I thought that person would react under those conditions, given their particular, you know, backstory and all that. And I wrote what I thought was natural for the characters. And it came out feeling to people like I must have done research into psychology, so I can only guess that what felt natural to me, you know, was pretty close to how people really act. You know, it just seemed to me that Harry's insecurity over being adopted would manifest itself with him trying to be extra good, you know, because he had always tried to please the Dursleys. No matter how unreasonable and horrible they are, usually when he's with the Dursleys in canon, he's being a brat. He's usually trying to get along with them, right? So I thought that would keep manifesting itself with Snape. And then Draco has been so spoiled and overindulged that I thought he'd have a vastly different reaction to the insecurity of being adopted.
That makes sense. Yeah.
You're like soul.
Yeah, I'm really impressed.
Whatever struck me as natural for that character at the time is how I would write it. And that is one of the big reasons why I didn't plan a lot of things in huge detail ahead, because when I would try to do that, I couldn't ever make the plot go to that point that I wanted to get to, because the people were reacting in a way that was different. You know, and I'd need to drive them in a different direction to get to point X, and the characters wanted to go to point Y. So I would just try to let the characters do what they clearly wanted to do when I was writing. It was like they were alive, and I was just letting them do their thing.
They had a mind of their own.
Yeah, exactly. And some writers can write out of sequence. You know, they can write chapter 20 before they've written chapter 4. The few times I have ever tried to do that, I have to throw away the future chapter because nothing lines up correctly. So to make it flow, I had to write it completely in sequence and let the characters guide me as to what they wanted to do next.
And I do want to say this, too. There were times in the story where, you know, there'd be a line of dialogue and it wouldn't say who says it. And I would think to myself, oh, that must be Snape saying this, and when you read it again, it's obviously meant to be Draco, and I could instantly tell just by the wording it didn't feel right. So I would read it again and be like, oh, okay, that was Draco saying that, because it just some stories lines are interchangeable. I did find that with your writing style and the way it came out polished, in that you could instantly tell who was saying what, regardless of whether it was identified, for what that's worth. I mean,
well,
I think they all have their unique voices. Yeah,
definitely. I definitely think that. Have you ever written to a chapter and you posted and then you were like, crap, like you put yourself in a hole that you had to get other than the owlery? I mean,
okay, well, when we did the owlery, it wasn't a reaction of, oh no, we're in this hole. It was, we knew we could solve it, but there were just, I can't even describe how many decisions had to be made to solve it. So it wasn't like that. But I've never written a chapter and posted it and then afterwards realized there's a huge hole to fix. Sometimes there'd be minor bumps along the way, and I just use that information later, somehow work it in somewhere to reconcile things. You know, I don't think I ended up with any enormous contradictions, although there were a couple of glaring, horrible mistakes that were posted initially that got fixed. Like, for example, in the next to last chapter, the one before the epilogue, mm-hmm. I had this wonderful scene, you know, where Draco gets all those points and Slytherin wins the cup, right? And I thought the scene was great, and so did Mercury. And then after I posted it, people came on and they said, oh, that was fulfilling. I just have one question. Why did Dumbledore call him Draco Malfoy when he was awarding the point?
Was that
Dumbledore's subtle way of saying he didn't really like him after all? It's like, no, that was my fucking way of forgetting his new name. So I went back and fixed it, you know. Things like that would live through.
Well, I heard Jo Rowling did that a couple times, and she's got, like, a lot of people working for her, so it's not that bad.
Oh, I was just horrified when I went on the site, and I saw, oh, I did leave his old name in there. What's wrong with me? what really surprised me about his name change, though, was when I did that, when I had him, you know, go with Draco Snape, I really expected a lot of reader backlash and very vocal objections that people didn't like that. And it didn't happen, which really surprised me. I thought it would upset people to have that Malfoy tag removed from him.
Well, my
Did
concern
upset
with
anyone
that,
who was reading?
Yeah, my thing with that
Did
was
upset
that,
any of you?
My thing with it was I always, because it, you know, the canon is written through Harry's perspective, and they always refer to the Potions Master as Snape. It almost seems like a first name after a while.
It does.
So when I heard Draco Snape, it's like, it was like earlier in the story, you made a reference, there was a reference to Harry Snape. And I remember thinking, ooh, that doesn't work, because it just seemed too odd. So then when it was Draco Snape, I kind of had the same thought. Like it didn't make me, you know, like, go take a walk around the, like, neighborhood or anything, but it took a while to get used to, because it seemed like his first name.
And I still do, personally, I think Draco Malfoy, as a name, sounds better, hangs together better. Draco Snape just kind of sounds flat, but
yeah,
there it is. That's his name.
I just have to pause for a moment here. I know you haven't listened to the last episode, but Mike, who's been on the podcast the last few episodes, hey, Mike.
Hey.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
How's that fever going?
It's there, but otherwise doing okay.
Okay, Mike, say hi
to
Aspen.
Did you take something for it? Hi, this is Aspen.
Hi, Aspen.
Did you take something for your fever?
I took some Tylenol.
Okay. I hope that brings it down.
Hopefully. I finally broke down and took some.
Mike.
You're trying the tough guy thing?
Yeah, that's men. Men don't like to take medicine, right?
Well, I always...
Not mine. Mine's like, oh, give me more.
I have this weird thing, like, I think if I take too much, I'll build up an immunity to it. So I try to save it for when
you're like the Neosporin guy. Oh. You don't use Neosporin because it makes, isn't that right?
Yes.
Like if you use Neosporin, then later in life when you have heart problems, the medicines don't work or something like that.
I've never heard that.
I
heard that from the doctor this week.
I just want to point out now, for those of you who aren't usually on this podcast, this is how we get off topic. We now have Aspen here, many questions, and we're talking about Neosporin. But continue, this is hilarious.
I'm sorry.
Jen,
yes.
No, continue talking about Neosporin. Finish your thought.
Well, that's all there was. I went to the doctor and I was telling him how I had used Benadryl cream and Neosporin, like, for some of my hives, trying to get rid of them. And he was like, oh, don't do that. Don't do that later in life. That'll come back, and when you have heart problems and they put you on, like, blood pressure medicine, that kind of thing, they're not as effective. So I was like, great! Whatever! Guess we won't use those anymore, because I'm like, I'm a frequent user of both.
God.
Benadryl cream and Neosporin. You get hurt, you put Neosporin and a Band-Aid. That's what I've been raised on, but apparently that's the new bad thing, like Q-tipping your ears. You're not supposed to do that either. I do that anyway.
Thank you,
Jen. Oh, I'm screwed then.
See, I know.
Mike, ask your question.
Oh, well.
I forgot.
The only question that popped to my mind right away was I was curious. I know in the when Harry gives the well wish to Draco, there's a little bit where he misreads it as Aspen. I was just curious if that was actually what you based your name on.
No, I had used the name Aspen previously when I was writing in another fandom. And early on in this story, some reader sent me in a comment and said, oh, I just figured out that if you rearrange Aspen, it spells Snape, which I thought, oh, that's interesting. You know, it was a coincidence, though. But then when I had the well wish, I thought it was, you know, clever to just put in that little bit of meta there and put the name in. And I had noticed on this list of plants that I was using to base the well wishes on that Aspen actually was supposed to represent eloquence in this system of, you know, plant properties. And I just thought it was cute, so I put it in.
Cool. One thing we've learned, Mike, because I know you're just joining us, we all thought she had everything planned out in advance. She knew nothing. She was writing about it. She knew she was writing off the seat of her pants. Yeah.
I'll give you an example of that.
Please.
I knew early on when I had Snape polyjuiced into Remus during the moon time going over to Privet Drive, I knew that was kind of strange because Remus should be a werewolf at that time. And I thought, well, you know, I might pull that out later and use it for something. It's there in reserve if I want to use it later. And I put in lots of stuff like that. And most of it I ended up using, so it looks woven together.
How stressful was that for you doing? How stressful was that just in terms of writing? Would you do that again if you had the opportunity, or was that just yourself?
No, I would do it again because to me that's fun. I think the reason why I like to write is it's an intellectual challenge. And it was just fun for me to throw out random things and think, oh, you know, maybe I'll use that later on. And then it's a challenge to see where it fits later.
If that was the case and you kind of didn't have a game plan, out of curiosity, was this always supposed to be a Snape, Harry, Draco story? Or did Draco
It was definitely a Snape adopts Harry story. And I threw Draco in because it was hard for me to resist the lure of put in this mysterious character and do you know if his motives are really good or not? And it was fun to swing the story back and forth a number of times, making people think, oh, he actually really is good. And then Harry's interpretation of the same events is different, so maybe he isn't. And to keep that suspense as long as possible is why Draco got woven into the story so much. And then in the end, as I was telling them earlier, I felt like I had to make him actually be good and end up being Harry's brother because Snape had trusted him so thoroughly that if Draco was hatching a big plot, it would mean Snape had had bad judgment. And Harry was so insecure about his new family, I didn't want him to have cause to doubt Snape's judgment.
How tempted were you at the end in the scene at Lucius's vacation home when we realized that there's something that we don't know about the adoption? Snape and Draco have some type of secret they haven't let Harry in on, which was obviously the fact that Malfoy was still part of his name. But when I was reading it, I didn't think he would be bad, but I thought that he would either be good or I thought that there would be something that he failed at. He wasn't as good as you thought, but it would still be redeemable. I was wondering if you were going to go for like that route a little bit and bring him a little bit more towards the center. Were you tempted at all, or did you pretty much know?
No. After I wrote the Christmas chapter, or the chapter right before Christmas, actually, where Draco does his big confession, and we find out why he really turned, and it turns out to be a profound enough reason that, you know, people could believe that he had a motive to throw over his old life. After I wrote that, there was no going back, and I never doubted Draco again. And I thought he would be a normal person with normal emotions and resentful of things that happened later. So he made that tremendous mistake with the poison, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he was never going to ever betray Harry in any way.
Okay.
But I thought it was fun to have him keep Malfoy as part of his name, and Harry didn't know that. And it's kind of an indication, too, of the limitations of the point of view, that people who are reading it often assume that everything that happens there is the gospel truth, and this is exactly how everybody felt. Well, no, it's Harry's interpretation of everything.
Yeah.
And you find out that there's things Harry doesn't know. He didn't know that Draco hadn't completely given up the Malfoy part of his name. And then you find out when you read Summer, there's a lot of other things about Draco that Harry misread during year.
Yeah, we were talking even last night about how we were talking about the Ron and Hermione kiss in Deathly Hallows, or I was talking about it with somebody, I don't remember, but that that Joe had to wait because Harry had to be there to experience it, to see it, because it's in his point of view.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, and do you ever find that it gets that you have a scene that you really want to happen, but since Harry, it doesn't involve Harry, you have to put it on back burner or have to play it past tense, like someone's telling him about this thing that happened?
I can't think of an example, but yeah, I know that happens quite a bit. That there were things I would rather have told in direct narration, but there was no way to get Harry personally to witness it. It just would have been too contrived. So
can you give an example where there are things you wish you could have told us in year that you didn't get the opportunity to because of that limitation?
I can't think of an example offhand. Let me think for a minute.
Oh, Jen, while she's thinking, we have to ask her the question last night. Remember when you went off in the McGonagall tangent for like an hour and a half?
I slept. What was the question?
Jen is on time delayed sleep aids at the moment. It was the question about Professor McGonagall and how close was she to Snape and what were her thoughts of the adoption?
Oh, right. Okay, Ryan.
Just so we know, everyone, we recorded part one of this last evening. So when we say last night, we mean the earlier part of this podcast.
Okay. Ryan thinks that McGonagall, when McGonagall found out about Harry being adopted by Snape, that she would have gone to Dumbledore and raised hell.
Yeah, she would have seen, like, Gryffindors can take care of Gryffindors. This isn't good for
Harry.
Like,
she would have had a big problem. And I was like, oh, no, she's mature. She trusts Snape. There would not ever be that kind of argument.
But in fairness, by the time you reach the point where Harry's having the problems with Professor Aaron and goes to McGonagall, and by the time you get near the end of the story, McGonagall has softened to it and sees it for what it is. That's my impression of it.
Let me think about that.
I know.
I did not view the story very much through the lens of McGonagall, especially not until later on, you know, when she's directly involved. I can say, you know, Ron reports that when McGonagall came to tell them that Harry was moving to the dungeons, her words were, for reasons passing understanding, it's been decided that, you know, Harry will be living in the dungeons.
Oh, I hate you, Ryan.
Yeah, that's a bit of a snooty way for her to say it, right?
Yes.
So you can deduce from that she wasn't really in favor of this plan. But I don't think she was so upset by it that she would have gone to Dumbledore and raised hell. I can see perhaps she might have voiced her concerns to Dumbledore and he would tell her, I know what I'm doing, or, you know.
And by raise holy hell, what I'm picturing is something. Have you seen Goblet of Fire, the movie?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I've actually seen Order of the Phoenix. I'm like some people, Ryan.
Well, I'm working on them. I have to do this whole podcast next time. Do you remember the scene? What I'm picturing is like the scene when they're all in Dumbledore's office, all the professors, and she's like, the hell with Barty. Like that's the type of, I don't mean like she's like grabbing him, you know, and throwing him into a trophy case, but I mean that she's stern.
She's not trusting him with lemon service. I think I lean more toward Ryan on this one, but I don't think McGonagall would have caused huge waves.
82% of the time.
I said like lean.
Snape. What can I say?
You know,
I like
she does
Snape.
Trust Snape. Well, here's what I think. She knows Snape's in the Order. She knows Snape's true loyalties. She doesn't have any real worries, you know, that Harry's in some kind of danger by being with Snape. You know, not like Ron had this, you know, ridiculous reaction to it. But
Rock that he is.
She also knows the James Potter history, and I think she would have concerns that Snape can be rational in all of his interactions with Harry and not cutting. You know, and Harry's in a position where he really doesn't need someone to be cutting to him and cruel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think she'd be concerned, but not manic about it.
Well, let me ask you this, this will be one of my last questions because I really want to let these guys get into it. And
I've got a list.
If Mike doesn't pass out,
she has a list. She hasn't even started, Ryan.
She hasn't even started the list. I know. Here's my question. Now, listening to these podcasts, I told you where I was coming from. I was coming from the canon perspective. It's got to feel real. like it's an offshoot of the canon, and then, you know, if you're going to convince me that Snape is a father figure, Draco is a brother, you have to do it over the progression, which I think overwhelmingly, I think you succeeded over the course of the full story. But, like, there's also people like me can appreciate the story. You know, people who start from where I am sometimes don't, but then you have people who, like Mike, who they don't like canon fix. They see the universe more towards your universe. They like, you know, the Snape Harry adoption. They like, you know, the non-canon ships and so forth. I guess my question is, and hopefully you can figure out where in all of this there's a question, like, where do you fit into, you know, having read the canon novels and your view of Harry Potter? And, like, were you writing for a specific type of person, or were you writing for yourself? Or, like, it amazes me that people with so many different impressions can pull a lot from this particular story and like it equally. Like, what are your thoughts?
Okay. I think the way I would answer that is my philosophy of writing is, the only thing I can write is my vision. And I would get a lot of comments as I was progressing through the story, people who were saying, oh, you should have this, you should have that, this should happen, that should happen. It's like, well, the only thing that can happen in the story is my vision for how I feel about these characters and what I can see them doing. And I can't write anything else. Now, I would have people send me plot outlines of, can't you write a story where this and this and this happens? And I say, if that's your vision, you need to write it. I can't write someone else's vision. So my basic philosophy of writing is I should write exactly what I want to read. So I guess you'd say I wrote it for myself in a sense. Okay. But if I'm not writing exactly what I would want to read, I'm not going to enjoy writing it. So, and I really like rereading my stuff, so I guess I succeeded in writing what I want to read.
Well,
it's good I like rereading it, because I have to reread it a lot to straighten things out in my mind.
That's true, because to keep up with everything, especially if you don't have notebooks of notebooks filled with future plot points.
That was Jen's.
All I've got is like chat logs. Chat logs where I discuss ideas, but yeah.
That's. Well, I'm stepping forward, so. and I know that I've sent you the list of everything. Will be everybody's seen them a little bit, but I want our listeners to get a chance to hear the answers. There are times where I can't decide which character I sympathize with most. I think all three of the major characters have very sympathetic backgrounds. Do you have a particular soft spot for one? Is there one that you prefer writing to the other?
I think I have a soft spot for three, and you could probably guess what three. I don't think I could single one of them out above the others. I did feel like after I'd finished writing Year that I had been immersed in Harry's point of view for a really long time. And I knew that there were things about Draco that Harry had vastly misread during Year, and I really wanted to explore those things, which you can only do through Draco's point of view. So anyone who's read Summer knows that some of it's in Draco's point of view and some of it's still in Harry's point of view. Mm-hmm. So by the time I finished Year, I really, really wanted to get to know Draco more directly, so I started writing from his point of view more. But I don't think I'd say I have more of a soft spot for him. I love all three of those characters.
Now, I know that in the world that you created, because in my mind, I do associate it with the world, the word world. That's really hard to say. but you know
it's
what I
world.
Mean?
World.
Thank you, Aspen. Thank
separate,
you.
Yeah, separate from the Hogwarts version, in my opinion. I mean, although it's all JKR's playground, I consider it a different place. You put your major characters through some really dark trials. Which part of the story do you enjoy writing the most? Do you enjoy writing the dark and angsty scenes, or like the working through the complicated, or like the happy sigh hug moments? Which do you know what I mean?
I think I like working. I don't like writing the dark, angsty scenes particularly well. I don't hate writing them either, but they're necessary to have other things develop afterwards, you know.
Yeah.
I think what I really, really like writing is I like writing the emotional angst of the day-to-day of dealing with issues from your past and how they're affecting your present. Like that whole sequence when Harry knows he's going to be adopted, but it hasn't been finalized yet, and he's just having such a hard time figuring out how what to call Snape, how to relate to Snape. He's on tenterhooks because he's worried, you know, the slightest misstep and the adoption could be canceled, which is a ridiculous fear, right? But it is his fear. And I like writing that, just the psychological trauma of dealing with real problems. Because that's a problem anyone could have. You don't have to live in a magical world to
right.
experience the angst of an adoption and feeling like you might not fit in with your family and all that.
And well,
that's what
this,
I like.
This leads to my next question. Good job. You chose to write a story about family. Obviously, that's a very personal subject with anyone. Do you ever write real-world scenarios from your own experience? Do you pull things from...
Well,
I know you,
I'm not adopted, and I don't actually know anyone who's adopted, so I couldn't say that it's, you know, the basic scenario is from my real experience. But there's little snippets here and there of, you know, some things that come out Snape's mouth are things that my parents said at one point or another. And yeah, you work some of your real experiences in there.
As a parent, is it easier for you to relate to Snape at times?
Yeah, I think so.
Which character do you most relate to? Are you one of those authors that, and I don't mean it as one of those authors, just generalize.
one of the authors, people.
But do you know what I mean? A lot of authors, they write, and they write themselves as a character, and they envision, like J.K.R. envisioned herself as one of them. Is a Hermione, right? I was going to say Hermione, and then I thought, wait, what if it's Harry? You're going to sound like a dumbass. But no, Hermione.
Thank you for vocalizing your concerns, Jen. Please continue.
Well, I don't think I am doing that, and I don't think I could do that in a Harry Potter story because the characters are already set for you. She could do it, right? Because she can create Hermione around herself, but
right.
I have to work with the sketch pad she left after the end of Order of the Phoenix. And so I try to make those characters be true to themselves. And
so just to clarify, you're not the case witch.
No.
And you don't dress like the case witch. I just want to be abundantly clear. You do not wear.
No. I tried to put her in the most garish colors possible. And you can believe I would think they're garish because I don't wear them, right?
All right. I just wanted to make sure she's not dating Dumbledore because they both
say. I'm not Richard Stane, and I'm not Horace. Darthwaite, I guess that was his name, yeah. Yeah, I guess there were a few originals in there, but no.
Okay. One question I just wanted to bring up as well, this is just more of not about the story, but just about your thought of something I brought up earlier. You know, this could have been a story about just three random guys living in New York City, you know, who had a really crappy childhood and they all found each other and kind of made a family. Well, it could have been, but the fact that it's Harry Potter means a lot. Earlier in this episode, we had Meg with us and we had Lady Chi, and for a lot of people reading this story was, you know, it was an opportune time, you could say, to read the story. Lady Chi was diagnosed with depression while reading the story, you know, as Harry's working through everything, and especially the plot line of the later chapters when Harry's cutting himself. You know, Meg,
okay.
Meg,
we need to not say cutting when he's not cutting.
Last night, we kept going.
I heard
cutting,
you were doing that last
cutting,
night. He's needling himself, okay?
I was like, S-I. It's S-I. That's the term.
But then
I
was thinking Sports
People
Illustrated.
People say cutting all the time, and that's not in this story. But okay. I know what you mean.
Okay. But,
he has self-harm issues.
Self-harm.
I'm the one that's, oh, it's S-H,
oh.
Maybe.
Well, I told you that.
Okay, guy with a fever got one right. Meg knows someone who, you know, has had this, you know, these experiences as well. How much do you think, you know, reading a Harry Potter story, to have Harry Potter deal with depression and to have, you know, Harry Potter deal with, you know, adoption, how much do you think stories like this, even fan fictions, can affect people, you know, in the real world, just going through similar situations. Do you see stories like this as something that can give people hope? Do you intend to do that when you write it, or is it just a happenstance?
I think it's happenstance. My intent to write it was not to be therapeutic to anyone except for Harry himself. Because one of my big goals in writing it, and I alluded to this earlier, when I said I'd read another adoption story that I love, and I've reread it several times, but I don't think it has Harry experiencing enough psychological issues that he really would have based on books 1 through 5. So one of my big motives in writing it was I felt after reading books 1 through 5, Harry is a very traumatized young child, and the canon is not going to deal with it. You know, she just goes on her track in which this incredibly scarring childhood of living in a closet and everything really doesn't have much of an effect on him. And it would have an effect on a real person. It would have a profound effect that has ripples of waves going through your whole life affecting you. And that's what I wanted to explore is how has this childhood affected Harry? And the focus of him being adopted by Snape gives you a point that lets the character is forced to deal with these emotions and things that he's always shelved because they were uncomfortable and he didn't want to have to deal with them. Well, he has to deal with them because the adoption doesn't give him any alternative. So I wanted the story to be therapeutic for Harry because I felt this poor child had been very badly abused by his relatives and he needed to be healed. And if it helps anyone else deal with, you know, psychological issues they're experiencing, then I'm happy. But my goal was to help Harry.
Well, there you go.
You know, if you read Half-Blood Prince and you read Deathly Hallows, I've read them and I enjoyed them, but they never satisfied the need I had to see Harry healed. Harry doesn't need to be healed in those because he's apparently not noticed any
totally
of these
agree.
Things that would have affected him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's unrealistic, you know, and I know she does that because it's a children's book and her intent wasn't to write a story heavily grounded in the psychological reality of trauma and abuse. But that's what I was interested in, so that's how my story came about.
And that's why we have fan fiction. No, just to let you know as well, Meg from the podcast, who couldn't be here tonight, unfortunately, did say that she does know someone who's been, you know, suffering through a lot of these issues. And she even mentioned the fact that she was just talking about the podcast and about your fic. And she even mentioned that there's a story out there about Harry Potter going through these issues. Would that be something that, you know, someone, you know, going through that would want to read? And, you know, the response back was, yes, I would absolutely want to read that going through it. So it is something that I think has the ability to, you know, impact people and help people. If Harry Potter can do this, so can I, you know, so just something to keep in mind too.
Good.
Well, no pressure.
No pressure at all. No pressure at all.
Slightly less, not as deep as what we were just talking about, but with Lupin and Snape, I was wondering, I get the impression sometimes that Snape's problems with Lupin go beyond both his earlier problems with James and his anger at Lupin for abandoning Harry, and that sometimes, I think we have a tendency sometimes to think of Snape as kind of without flaws. But I think one of his flaws is he's almost jealous of Harry. You can tell me if I'm wrong, in the sense that he doesn't want, like, his problem with Lupin is more that he doesn't want Harry loving Lupin as much as Harry loves him, if that makes sense.
That makes sense, and you're right. There is an element of that there. Another one of my goals in writing this was I wanted all the characters to have flaws, you know, because real people do have flaws. And so I deliberately made sure that Snape's flaws are evident, you know, not that they weren't in canon, but you see another set of flaws here. So I see Snape as he is a little bit insecure with how Harry regards him sometimes, and he's worried that because Lupin had a positive relationship with Harry much earlier than Snape ever did, if Harry has a lot of contact with Lupin, that could displace some of his feelings toward Snape, which it's not, I mean, just like some of Harry's fears, I don't think that's a realistic fear. I don't think Harry would react that way, but Snape is worried about it, yeah. And one other one of his issues with Lupin is Snape took pride in his position in the order that he was the only one who was in Voldemort's inner circle. He was the important spy. you know, we know from like Prisoner of Azkaban that it was important to him to get that Order of Merlin, to have that recognition that he's a hero too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he was always very proud of himself. And now that's been taken away and Lupin has taken that place and he has anger issues with Lupin's the one who's going to get the accolades and the Orders of Merlin and the honors. So he's jealous of Lupin on a number of levels.
Yeah, because it's one of those things that you really can't tell from Harry's perspective, but it was interesting in the epilogue to get some Snape perspective in there. And I haven't read beyond the epilogue, but I know that in summer and maybe in year seven, you'll get some Draco perspective and some Snape perspective and some other perspectives in there. But one thing I found was very interesting was it seemed like you could have told the story, you know, completely over again from Snape's perspective, because there was so much happening with him that year that you never saw because Harry never noticed. So I thought
I have had people ask me to do that. I have had many requests. Can you please rewrite the whole thing from Snape's point of view?
That shouldn't take you long. That shouldn't take you long.
You know what I'm going? I think I'd rather write year seven than do year six again. Especially when we know all the main developments that will happen, you know?
One shot.
Oh, you know, but that brings up a question I had for you, Ryan. I have been curious all along if when you finished reading this story, if you would have any interest in continuing into the sequel.
I actually...
Yesterday.
Yeah, earlier in this podcast even, for those of you listening to it in chronological order. I actually did load chapters 1 through 5 of Summer onto my iPod. We're going to be reading Shoebox next, but I'm going to try and fit it in. I actually am interested in continuing because one of the big things in fan fiction is that I like to get into a new universe and explore characters from a different perspective, and from my perspective this is very different, so it's interesting for me to read. Plus I always, like, someone on the forum the other day had a great way of describing this. It's kind of like, you know, when people come off of the space station, you know, and they're in space for a while, they can't walk when they get back to Earth. There's this, like, downtime. So if you read a universe for a while, then you try and jump into a new fic, there's that, you know, adjustment period where you're trying to forget the fact that, you know, Snape is a good guy and Draco is the brother, and you have to try and reset yourself. So I try and stay in the same universe as long as I can. So, hey, if you're going up to chapter 118, I'll keep reading. So I am going to continue onward, yes.
Okay. Good to know.
I don't know if you were asked this question already, but I was curious, as someone who's reading along and I read your little author notes at the end of your chapters with, is it Mercrate? Mercedi?
Merc. How
are
was you? Actually, Mercrate. See, it's not just me, and he has a fever, so it'll be
Mercrate. Nice. Anyway.
But, so I was wondering, I get the sense sometimes it seems like more so than in some other fics, she has a more proactive role in the story. That it sounds like she writes certain sections, or she's much more involved in the creative process more than just baiting. So I wonder if you do that.
Oh, she's not just a beta. No, she's really, really involved in the creation of it. Yeah. And she wrote some good sections of chapters in the later part of year. Oh. And you can tell which chapters have really direct contributions to the actual narrative, because I'll put her in the author credit for those chapters.
Oh, there's something I wanted to ask you. Hang on, let me find this thing here. It's in one of your...
But anyway, to answer Mike a little more, Mercury and I would just chat for hours and hours and hours about every chapter as we went along and brainstorm ideas off each other. And you know that word synergy, where, you know, you're better as a team than you are as two separate individuals? That's really, really true for this story. And we can't even remember, the two of us sometimes, we can't remember who exactly thought of this or that development because the process was so synergistic.
I have a question for you. In the author's notes of chapter 90, you're referencing, you know, how Mark really came up with some great ideas, and you say one of your original plot ideas involved...
I know what this is going to be. Go on.
So it involves somebody acting like a cross between Dracula and the giant spider. What the hell were you going to do?
I knew that was what you were going to say as soon as you started reading the notes. Okay, the scene is where Draco walks in to talk to Professor Aaron to get his amulet back, and he finds out that Lucius is in the room, and the door closes, and Harry's trapped in the hallway. And I forget now the exact circumstance of why I thought I needed to do this. I was trying to solve some kind of detail plotting problem. And at one point, everybody don't laugh. Oh, God, you're all going to laugh. At one point, I thought that Lucius Malfoy would be clinging to the ceiling above the door, like kind of hanging like a spider at the ceiling level. And when Draco, or maybe it was when Harry came in, I can't remember which, but he was going to, like, pounce down on him. And I capture him. Okay, and honestly, I cannot remember why I thought that was necessary. At some point, I did think I would need to go that way, right? And I was chatting with Mercury about it, and she was, no. We're not doing that. We can solve your problem another way.
This is like friends don't let friends wear plaid. It's kind of like,
yes,
a similar.
It was one of those moments, exactly.
I gotcha.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, so.
How do you
and I'm
up?
Sure there's probably other weird things I thought of that she stopped me from doing, but because I didn't put in author's notes like that all the time, I can't think of any others. But I know that wasn't the only weird thing she saved
it's
me
It's tough
from.
To forget Dracula and the Giants.
I kind of like Spider-Man, Lucius. I like that.
That would be
you should really go somewhere with that.
Oh, I just
think it's Dracula because his cape was going to be hanging, you know,
I just have to,
dramatically.
I just have to ask a real fast question, Jen, and then I'll turn it back over to you for some final questions. Whose idea was it to put statue Lucius underneath the owlry where the owls fly and poop?
I hate to answer that because I honestly, I can't be totally sure. I think that was my idea.
Okay, good, because I am legally required under both state and federal law to name my firstborn after you. Listen to the last podcast to find out why. All right,
I know for sure. I remember that I thought of having the spell where the flowers bloom around the statue and we were going to make them be pansies. I remember I thought of that. I decided to put them under the allergy. But, you know, like I said, it could have been Mercury because the way we bounce ideas off each other, we lose track of who
we're
gonna
who's
what.
We're going to pretend it's you because there's no way if my kid's name is Mercury that I'll ever be able to remember their name. So we're just
pronounce it. So.
This is my child, Mercedes. My wife hits me in the back of the head. All right.
How do you say it?
Gen fire. You have 284 questions.
I know, and I had it on my mind.
Go.
I have to prioritize them.
There you go.
I know.
Okay, Aspen, I want to know who or how did you come up with the idea of having Harry use parcel tongue for his magic? Since he doesn't have
I thought of that
anymore.
Early on, and unlike some things in the plot, when I posed the problem of, you know, like, what is the key to his magic? You know, no one can figure it out. I knew already it was going to be parcel tongue, and I was just waiting for the right time to let Harry find that out. I guess I don't know how I thought of that. I don't think I had read it anywhere before. It seemed like I was focusing on his dark powers, and I had claimed that parcel tongue was one of these dark powers, and it just made sense to me that that would be the key. But I couldn't say, you know, really how I analyzed it, how I came to that conclusion.
Well, that sort of leads me to my question.
Go ahead.
No, Kira, what were you saying? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're fine. I was just wondering if Sal's was ever originally meant to be, or might still be, I don't know, a Voldemort plant. Because I know that,
people suspected that all along, and that was okay with me for them to have this, you know, feeling of uncertainty and wondering if there's a deeper story there. But the honest truth about Sal's is Sal's was my attempt to do a little therapy on myself, actually, that time, because I don't like snakes very much. And I thought, well, if I could write, like, the cutest snake in the world who's so adorable and da-da-da, maybe I'll get over my snake phobia. That's what Sal's was all about. No, I don't think it works.
Teddy bear.
Well,
so
probably going to help you.
What's really, really funny about Sal's is I had read several stories where Harry did end up with a pet snake and he could talk to a snake in parcel tongue all the time and they became best friends and all this stuff. And when I started writing here, one of my things in my head was there is no way I am going to do this. He's not getting a pet snake. I'm not going to do that. Too many stories do that. And then, sure enough,
Harry got a pet snake.
I did think.
Parcel tongue is too fun to exploit, you know?
I actually did think that Sal's was a plant, but then again, I am brilliant. I am brilliant 82% of the time, Jen. This was in the other 18. It was right next to the garden gnome, yeah.
I didn't think that Sal's could be a plant because my view of the warding on number 12, Grimmauld Place, is that nothing evil that intends harm to Harry could be introduced into that house.
Sal's has a memory charm, so he doesn't remember being a plant.
Well, Sal's is a she to begin with, and
damn,
memory plant would get you around that.
Oh, good God!
I don't think so. Oh, but there was something else I was going to tell you interesting about Sal. This answers another one of Jen's questions that she sent me. She said, "Who came up with the legs like broken eggs incantation for the partial tongue version of?" Jelly Legs Jinx, right? And Mercury and I, we spent lots and lots of time in chat trying to figure out parcel tongue versions of things, and that was hers. Because I emailed her and I said, okay, a snake is not going to know the word like jelly. Snakes don't eat jelly. What is in a snake's world view? You know, we were always trying to make it like from the point of view of the snake. How would a snake describe things to make the parcel tongue? Because to me that seemed logical. And Mercury came up with that it would be legs like broken eggs because a snake would be familiar with eggs.
That makes perfect sense.
That's just a piece of her brilliance right there.
I'm picturing your daily schedule. Where are you going now? I'm going to find, you know, parcel tongue words for broken legs. Be back.
I had a question about the same thing. Like, is when y'all come up with all the little specific world-oriented points, like the well wish or some pure blood background, like the candle. I really love the candle scene at Christmas. How
the candle was Mercury and the well wish was mine.
Yeah. How do you come up with such original?
Ooh.
Okay, the main way I come up with them is things occur to me as I'm in the process of writing. Honestly, most of the story is I was sitting there typing away, working my way through a scene, and it would suddenly cross my mind, wouldn't it be neat if, and I'd like the idea and I'd work it in, and the well wish was one of those.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Why did you go ooh, ooh like a monkey?
I thought of a great question, but I think we answered it on the podcast last night. My question real fast, and then we're going to, maybe we'll just do like a final thought and question per person here, because we actually have to run in a few minutes, but my question was, if all of Draco's possessions were essentially repossessed.
I heard this on the last episode I listened to. I don't know why you got so hung up on that.
Okay, let me point out, Jen over here got once hung up on a boat from the 7th Horcrux for like 3 days. All right. No, my question
is, I will tell you the details on that, okay?
Right.
When Draco is expelled and he has technically broken the terms of the trust, which was providing him his separate income, the terms of the trust said that all of the money still remaining in the vault, whatever he hadn't spent, right, would revert to the Malfoy estate. So it goes back to Lucius. And anything that he has purchased with that money that is still in his possession will also go back to Lucius.
So he could have given...
And that's an important point because... He gave Harry a shirt for Christmas.
Yes, that was my
which
question.
Is really important later. Mm-hmm. Harry still has to have that shirt. Things don't vanish if he's given them away.
So, wait,
and
that
they don't vanish if he's
later?
Eaten them and they've been digested either, you
it's
know?
It's the not one. It's the one with, it's the shirt he's wearing when not attacks him.
Jen's ears like perk up whenever she says, that's an important part later. I'm like, really?
No, it was from
Do you remember the shirt Harry's wearing to Hogsmeade where he can tap the buttons to change colors?
Yeah.
Oh, and it'll change the buttons to snake emblems, and he needed that.
So if Draco signed over all of his worldly possessions to Snape before his expulsion...
But he couldn't. See, I covered that. The terms of the trust were very specific, and he had only nominal control. He was allowed to spend a certain amount. He couldn't take all the money out of that vault. He couldn't will it to someone else.
I just need, like, on a completely different subject, the next time I move, you're doing the closing on my house. That's all I can say.
I had to put it that way, though, because these guys are very smart. You know, they're probably abnormally smart in the story. I've heard people comment on that. they would have thought of that. If he's worried about losing his money because he's expelled, he would have given it all to Snape to avoid that, right, before he's expelled, if it were possible. But the terms of the trust only gave him nominal control.
That was a word I had to look up.
Oh, and to answer the question that I heard you asking on that episode, if he had been wearing all things that were purchased himself,
this has got to be Jen,
instead of purchased by Lucius, he would have ended up not wearing anything, yeah.
Ooh, baby.
Jen would like to talk to you about
it. It was just luck of the draw that most of his clothes he had on at that moment were Lucius' purchases instead of his own.
Of Draco.
Oh, God.
Well, Draco... I have to tell you, my one huge hope for this story is that Draco and Hermione get together. Because he said she was cute.
And Jen, you know, and Jen came back from the dead, so we have to give
I know.
Jen what she wants. So.
Every time I'm like, there, you see? There, it's a hint. And Ryan's like rolling eyes. No, it's not. Yes, it is. It could
I
be.
Have revised the story. I just want to tell you this, okay? I have revised the story so that when I read my draft here at home, it's not exactly the same as the one that's posted, because I haven't had a chance to go upload the revised chapters. It's just so much work. Anyway, though, I just thought I'd mention, I was told in very specific terms after I had that Draco says you're cute line that cute is an Americanism, and it really didn't fit the British world. So it now he says she's pretty, just so you know.
Oh, that's even better!
Just so you, and she's
pretty
not smart
so
anymore. She's clever, because clever is more of a British term, see?
Right.
So Draco said she's smart and clever, and clever and pretty in the final version. Anyway, your question?
That's awesome.
Jen can't remember.
Oh, no. Obviously, I'm hoping that in the future, Draco will at some point wear leather of some sort. And and I have to say, I don't know if you're planning on future romantic interests with the characters, but my two cents are that I hope that Draco and Hermione get together. Maybe.
I know that's your two cents.
I'm always like, Aspen.
She's like, Jen, I got the package. I understand.
No, I'm not willing to give out, you know, spoilers about the end of the story. And part of that is because I don't think that JKR does that. You know, people who demand to know the pairing before they read the story. Well, I didn't see a note in Half-Blood Prince telling me it was a Harry Ginny before I started, you know. Right? So I don't do that. But I will say that there's definite room to maneuver, okay? How about that?
She writes things openly, folks.
I was going to say, it cracks me up when people demand to know the pairing. I won't read the story unless I know in advance that it's Draco Luna. Because no one does that with the canon books. You never knew what the pairings were going to be, right?
Right. Well, so far, I mean, there's not really, this is a family fic. It's not a ship fic. And
I
think
it's not romantically focused.
That's important. I mean, if they did hook up or if they didn't, it still wouldn't be a ship because that's not what it's about.
If he wrote a Harry Snape fic, you get a whole different class of.
Oh, no.
It's an adoption fic.
Adoption.
That's a key word.
Okay, my last and final question is, your fic is extremely popular. What do you think is its major appeal to the readers in the fandom, and why do you think some people have a hard time accepting the story, and why do you think some people fall in love and become, like me, stalkers of you forever?
Okay, I think it all goes back to the point of view about Severus Snape. I think that many, many readers, myself included, we could see from reading the canon that Harry and Snape, you just end up with this yearning for these two to get along. It seems like they could do each other a world of good if they could just learn to get along. And to be honest, I was so hoping for that in Deathly Hallows. You know, that scene where Snape is admitting to Dumbledore, you know, various things about always having loved Lily and whatever. That wasn't enough for me. I needed to see him talk to Harry. I needed that emotionally, and I never got it from the canon. So I think it's very popular because a lot of people feel that way, that they like these two characters, and they think these two characters could be good for each other. And they want to see that. So they go for fics that show them that. And, you know, there's a number of other fics where Harry adopts Snape and Dobbs Harry.
I've read one of them.
Very popular. There's some other ones that are fantastically popular too, because it fulfills this need that people have. They know Snape is good and they want to see him do some good for Harry. To answer the opposite part, I think there are people who can't stand reading that type of fic because their basic view of Severus is very negative and they don't want to see him portrayed sympathetically.
Okay, I just want to finish really quick. Did you notice an increase of readers after Deathly Hallows? I mean, do people...
besides us.
besides us. Are you finding that because people feel like they didn't get what they wanted in Deathly Hallows? Is it Hallows or Hollows? No, I can't remember. Hallows. Anyway, Hallows.
Hallows. Because the word is hallowed, you know. But anyway, I didn't notice... you know, there's been a continuing stream of new readers coming on and leaving me comments, and, you know, so I know new people are starting it, but I didn't notice a spike or anything like that. And you got to realize, too, I would estimate there are at least 1 million Harry Potter fanfics out there on the internet.
Oh, at least.
Wouldn't expect that people who were disappointed by some aspect of the final book, I wouldn't expect they would all find one story and glomp onto it. There's just so much to choose from.
Well, give Jen some credit. Jen is trying.
I know. How many people have I got to read the story?
Can I just tell you, Jen, we put this in the podcast earlier. Jen and I made an agreement back in February that she would read one of my fics and I would read one of hers. And mine, I think, was the Psychic Serpent trilogy, and she read it in 3 days. And hers was, that she wanted me to read, was this fic called A Year Like None Other. I finished it last night around 7:43, so I just want to point out the fact that Jen is a better friend than I am.
I started reading the Psychic Serpent trilogy. I have started it. Yeah, I'm in the first book, and I'm kind of progressing slowly through it because I don't have a lot of time to read. But I'm enjoying it a lot. Yeah, that's a good recommendation, too.
You'll like the second story. The second part is my favorite.
Teen contrast to Ryan.
Just spoil it for me now. Is there adoption? Do I ever see an adoption here?
Interesting. Keep reading.
You see a bikini?
Oh, my goodness. I was so sure he would say no.
Well, it's one of those things where yes and no. So just...
Yes and no. Now, that's a fascinating answer.
Well, I'm a very fascinating person 82% of the time. Mike, what's the question?
Now I'm going to have to stop writing so much and read more.
No, Ryan, bad. Yeah, Karen, I'm like, no.
Everyone,
bad, Ryan's bad.
Jen read the thing in 3 days.
Can I give out another story recommendation?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure.
This is one that's still in progress, but I've been reading it for a while and eager for new chapters, and it's really, really good. Anyway, it's called Better Be Slytherin.
I love that one.
That is a fantastic
one. You like that too. It's on fanfiction.net.
I love it.
And it involves Harry being sorted Slytherin and Snape having to learn to deal with him. You know, it's you know, like I'm telling you, even though I don't think there's going to be an adoption in that story, the same basic need is being addressed for people who want to see Harry and Snape get along, right?
Yes.
Of course, I never would have pegged Ryan for one of these people.
Who knew?
Okay. Anybody else have a final question?
Can I ask two final questions?
Absolutely. Oh, Mike, why don't you go, and then we'll close out with Kira.
Hey, Kira.
Cool. Okay.
My first question was, I know this is based, it diverges after book 5, but I was curious... Yeah. After you read book 6 or 7, is there anything you take from those books that you now weave in or add into the story just because you think it's a useful part of the universe?
Oh, yes. The Unbreakable Vow.
Yeah, I noticed that.
But, you know, at the end I used the Unbreakable Vow. I wouldn't have done that if Half-Blood Prince hadn't come out, because I wouldn't have thought of it, right? I thought it was a very useful technique they had for making vows, so I worked that in. And you know what's ironic is I wrote the chapter on Hostilian, where you give Snape's backstory for my universe. I wrote it 2 weeks before Half-Blood Prince came out. And as soon as Half-Blood Prince came out and I read it, I was like, oh gosh, I just gave Snape a different father with a different story. And this is all about Snape's father. And I was, you know, beside myself, because it was too late to go back and change it all. And plus, you know, I had made him a pureblood all along, so it was way too late to change any of that. But I found it ironic that Half-Blood Prince, which I never ever expected in a billion years to give me details on Snape's father, right? I never expected that.
Right.
And it did. And it did right after I had done my own version of Snape's father. It's one of those, you know, going to kick yourself. Apart from the Unbreakable vow, I can't think of anything else I pulled from Half-Blood Prince, but I'm sure there are things, you know. There just are. Because the whole universe she created, it all blends together in my mind, and I just pick and choose things that I find interesting.
It's harder for the readers, I think. I know that I was talking to somebody the other day, and I was like, yeah, you know, the Well-Wish from canon. And I like mix and match things that really didn't happen. And it's hard for me to disassociate what's real now versus what's...
Things like that. Yeah, I had someone once comment to me something about Skaradicate Solve, you know, which erases the scars. And they clearly thought it was from canon. And I had to say, you know, no, that one was mine.
Well, we did that because...
It'll mix together in your head.
Yeah,
because
we read The Seventh Horcrux by Melinda Leo, and then canon came out. And the joke is that Melinda guessed like 85 down to like lines of dialogue. She nailed, aside from the fact that, you know, Snape is a murdering
bastard. Down to Ginny's dress color at the wedding. Like, it was crazy.
I'm remembering lines of dialogue from Deathly Hallows that were actually in The Seventh Horcrux.
I have to say this now here, the record, okay?
Yes.
This is important, okay? And I'm telling you the honest truth. Believe me, it is true. There is a scene in the next chapter of A Summer Like None Other, which is, you know, coming out as soon as I can finish writing the thing. I have had this scene in my head for at least a year. I've, you know, known that this is going to happen, right? And it really echoes something that did happen in Deathly Hallows. And I was talking to someone about it the other night, and they were going, are you worried that people are going to say, you know, you copied this idea from Deathly Hallows? And I'm like, well, you know, I didn't. And there's nothing I can do about it if people want to believe I did. And besides, you know, I am copying how many characters offer. What am I going to do? But when you read it, those of you who are going to read it, you'll probably know what I'm talking about when you see what happens. And you can... Remember, you heard it here first. I thought of that before I read Deathly Hallows, okay?
I'm going to spend the next week, 2 weeks, whatever it is, trying to figure out, guess what it's going to be.
I just hope it can be 2 weeks and not 2 months, because I'm really having a hard time finding
Don't
time
make it
right
2 months. These people are going to hate me thinking I sent you off to read all of Psychic Serpent, which is huge.
Well, I'm just having trouble finding writing time lately, but okay.
Mike, did you finish or did you have one more?
Oh, yeah, I had one other. I was going to ask you, I guess, the standard interview question, which is just that I know we have all these, it seems in our forum that everyone there tries to write fanfic, and you're kind of like, if this is real life, you're like the number one New York Times best-selling author who gets like the made-for-TV movies and everything. So I was wondering.
I don't think so, but okay.
So like, what advice would you give to people who are just, you know, starting off or trying to find their feet in this sort of genre?
Well, I gave this advice earlier a little bit to another question, but my best advice is you have to write the story that you would enjoy reading, and you have to write the vision that you see in your head for how things should go and what people should say and how they should act, because I feel that that's the only story you can write well. Is the one you really believe in and the one you really long for. And you try and write somebody else's vision, I think you'll give up on writing it. You know, there's a lot of works in progress that get abandoned. I wonder how many of those the author started trying to write to the audience instead of write her own vision. And you lose interest in your own story that way, I think. So write your vision. That's my advice.
That's good advice.
That's really good advice.
I'm very moved by this. I'm not just saying that. It sounds fake, but I really am. Kira, what's your question?
Yes, well, it's kind of a question, but it's more of just a general statement. You, Aspen, and I, we have talked about this a couple of times before, because I remember the first time I met you, I was beyond excited. I was practically screaming because I, you know, my absolute favorite author ever was, you know, writing to me and talking to me.
Sounds like January.
I had that moment several times.
Around like 7:45 this morning.
And I remember I kind of asked you about that, and you were saying how so many people you guess are intimidated to approach you because people, you have so many fans, but so few of them actually come forward and introduce themselves. And I don't know, how do you feel about that really? Because I mean,
well, I don't know if they're intimidated or if it just wouldn't occur to you to try and get in closer contact. I mean, how many of us would think of trying to find JKR in chat? I don't know. I think it just doesn't occur to people, really.
Right.
But, what exactly is your question, though? I'm not sure I follow it.
I don't know. I'm just wondering because, like, I remember you were telling me that, you know, you would love to meet more of your fans, but, you know, so few of them actually come forward and say very much to you. They talk amongst themselves, but I don't know. You feel almost like a little disconnected from them. And do you,
sometimes,
you know,
because
do you
people will come on to make one comment to me, like, oh, I love Chapter 18, squee, and then they'll never chat with me again. It's like, dude, I'd love to talk to you more. I don't know what causes that.
I don't know. I was just wondering if you would, you know, encourage people to come forward and say hi who might not otherwise because they think you might be too busy or not really care. Because I remember I used to think that at one point, it's like, oh, if I ever said anything, she wouldn't give a hoot. I'm just like one in a million. But,
yeah, I'm asked,
you know, look
thousands
where it brought
fans.
Me. So.
And no, anyone who wants to get in touch with me, it's not hard to do. You can leave a review on the story and leave your email address, and I'll email you probably when I have time. Or, you know, I'm on the Yahoo group, and I reply to people lots of times there, too. And I don't
think
I'm hard to find.
You email me back a few times, actually. I don't know if you
emailed you a few times?
Yeah, I was
No, I can't say I remember those individual ones.
About
were you on the Yahoo group?
Yeah, with the wands, and I was talking about, like, switching wands and the, whatever.
Oh, just recently with the most recent chapters.
Yep, yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I know that
the mic from the forum was someone from the Yahoo group, too, yeah.
I know that when I first got in touch with Aspen, I had saved, I thought it was such a big deal that she had written back to me. When I posted, like, in college, and I had saved those emails, and I was like, look, you wrote me this. And I was, like, posting and, like, showing her and she was like, yeah, I remember. Not, who were you again? No, but it was really great.
Well,
I get
so many messages that it becomes a bit blurry. Yeah, but it's fun to talk to people. I love to talk about the story.
I have one last question for you. Now, you said before you were sitting, you know, with Mark one day and you know, it was suggested, hey, if you like this story idea so much, go write it yourself. Well, you wrote, you know, 97 chapters and you are, you know, partway in the middle of a trilogy, essentially. What do you know now that you didn't know before? What wasn't the way you expected? Like, give us the before and after. What's different that I'm not
you mean
sure.
How the plot turned out?
No, not necessarily the plot. Maybe something, you know,
just being in the fandom.
Yeah, maybe being in the fandom. Take it any way you want. Maybe the fandom, maybe, you know, the story, you know, changed, you know, entirely from what you may have expected it to have turned out to be. Just whether you know, or maybe even about yourself, you know, having done this. What do you know now that you didn't know when you started?
Well, I didn't know I could write a story that would be as popular as this because I wrote in this other fandom. And I did get some compliments for my stories, but it was a small fandom to begin with. And I had no idea that there were so many people out there hungry for Harry Potter fanfic. The audience is just enormous, the people that are interested in reading Harry Potter fanfic, you know. So it was a big shock to me when I realized how many people were reading each chapter. You know, you put something up on the internet and you don't know how many people are reading it. It might be 10 people, right? And then you come back the next day and there's 200 reviews on your latest chapter and you're like, oh, wow, a bunch of people are reading it.
Does that help you continue writing, knowing
that
people are reading?
It really, really helps me continue writing. It's difficult for me to continue a storyline when I don't have anybody reading it, and I feel like I'm the only one interested in it. Now, I know I said write your vision, write for yourself, write what you want to read, but it's difficult when you're the only one involved in the project to keep that interest up.
That's true.
So, you know, like I've written some original novels, and some of them are works in progress that got abandoned, and some I finished, but, you know, the one I finished the most efficiently Mercury was actually reading it too. So I had somebody to bounce ideas off of and keep my interest high, you know.
Can we read those at all?
I know, I was like, can you post those here?
I would love to get one of my original novels published, and I've been working on that, but it's really, really difficult to get published. So if you know anybody who can get me published, drop me a line.
Awesome. Well, okay, I think we're kind of, I think I get the sense that we could go on for 17 hours, and if you've heard any
a lot of people asked them my list, and so I didn't have to ask them all.
Exactly. Well, Jen did send me the first 20 questions, so I stole most of her questions. I feel like we could go for like 7 hours, so I know this isn't the last time we're talking to you, because there's so much.
I hope not.
Yeah, because there's so much more we could even ask, but if we don't want
to. Oh, it's fun, yeah. It's very fun.
If we don't want the podcast to be 12 hours long, we should end here for the night. I just want to thank you, you know, personally, just, you know, on behalf of the podcast. It's one thing to, you know, write a story, like you said, and put it online and see, oh my God, 200 people read this. It's another thing to listen to literally, like, what, like 33 hours of people talking about, you know, every, like, line of the story and why did she write it that way? And why didn't she write it this way? And then if you wrote it that way, we would have asked you why you didn't write it the other way. I mean, it's a difficult thing to probably have to listen to. You know, there's praise, there's criticism. It's definitely being under a spotlight for like 11 weeks. I just want to thank you for putting up with that, because I say, you know, oh, I definitely would love it if someone did that about something I created, but it's definitely going to be difficult. So thanks for bearing with that for all of these weeks.
Well, you know, it's nerve-wracking at times, but I have really, really enjoyed listening to the podcast. So I wanted to thank you for putting the project together.
Hey, no problem. Jen, you know, basically, you know, bribed me, and she put something in my coffee, and it kind of went from there.
Oh, and I had an answer to a question that you asked on the very, I think it was the very first episode.
Okay.
Awesome.
Well, I remember the question then, so what's the answer?
I remember this from so long ago. You had asked when Harry and Snape first go up to Dumbledore's office to deal with the issue of the letter that Harry has now just read, because Snape made him write.
Yep.
You asked, how did Snape and Dumbledore seem to know what the plan was already without having discussed it? And did Snape go in first and mapped out a plan with Dumbledore, and then they let Harry come in? You remember that question?
Yes.
You're going to say it was... Because the scene opened, everybody was already in the office, and you didn't know what might have happened between chapters.
What's Lemency?
My idea on that was, I was actually trying to show that Snape and Dumbledore had worked together so closely and for so long that they knew how the other one thought. So they were almost anticipating each other in that scene, and they would immediately, each of them, know they were thinking of Lupin as for the Polyjuice, and maybe it doesn't work, but that was my intention there.
Well, that one was in the 18% that I get wrong, because I think I was the one who came up with the door idea, so.
But it made sense to me that they wouldn't need to map out a plan in detail, that they could just sort of develop it naturally together, because they work together so much in the order that they're used to doing that, thinking on the fly.
Anyway,
I thought I'd mention that.
Okay, maybe it's like 80-20. Maybe it's not like 80-20. Maybe it's more like 80-20.
No, we can knock you down a few notches more if we try.
I'm sure we have plenty of time for that later, though. I mean,
he's like, we better wrap this up.
Yeah.
No,
the theme music cuts in right here. So that's me. Does anyone else? I'm sure everyone else here probably wants to like just say something before we close out. Just thoughts on the fic or messages to Aspen or anything. Does anyone else want to just close out?
I will. Shut up. You're making me sound like some crazy person.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm joking. No, I just want to say a great big thank you, Aspen, for writing this fic, number one, and two, being an open author. And when I say open author, I mean one that is there for its, I think one of the first things that inspired me to keep reading the story was the feedback that you gave your readers on the Yahoo group. Like, I thought it was so cool. Like, that was, you were the first author I saw that made themselves available to the public, which I know that makes you sound like you're on a pedestal or something. But there are so many fan fiction writers where you don't have any connection to them as a person. And as such, you can't, it's different. And so I just want to say thank you for being making yourself available for this kind of thing, getting to know your readers. And I know that Kira and I are probably a purple of where it gets you. I started reading your story years and years ago, and I never envisioned actually talking to you in person. And here I am 4 years later.
And it only took 4 years.
I know. Well, I mean, to me, that is something extremely incredible. And the fact that you've captivated a lot, not just me, but lots of people's attentions for that long. It's really something. And so thank you.
Oh, well, I have a great time discussing things with readers, so I really enjoy it too.
Makes it a fun party. No.
Mike, you have anything?
Just, I love your story. When I first found it, I sat down and read it through the whole night until I was done, and I've been addicted
to
it ever
since.
You read the whole thing in one day?
I know! I was like, I took off from school for like 3 days.
Well, I stayed up through the night. Like, I remember, like, it started at like 4 p.m.
When you found it, was it a completely finished story already?
A year like none other was finished, and you were on like chapter 15 of Summer, I think.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, that's a lot to read at once. Wow.
No, he's done this before. I've had the same thing happen. Something not right with him.
I was all, like, addicted to it. I'm like, I can't stop. It's 3 a.m. It's 4 a.m. I have to keep going.
You know, that's one of the things that happens to me that slows me down writing is I'll have to go back and look up the detail, and I will find it. But I'll get sucked into reading the story, and I'll just, like, read it for 4 hours. And, like, oh, well, there goes my writing time. Because I really, really enjoy it, too. So I can relate.
Kira, you want to get us out of here?
Yes. Yeah, I just want to say thank you. I mean, Jen covered a lot of what I was going to thank you for, but wow. I mean, yeah, thank you.
Well, it's been great getting to know both of you.
I know.
Yeah, I think we have a great time.
Thank you for letting me be a part of anything. I mean, I feel so honored. You have absolutely no idea. But, and I mean, even down to, like, you know, uploading chapters on different sites and, you know, recording MP3.
Oh, yeah,
I have to
give some thanks now to Kira. I have to give thanks to Kira because I had wanted to get the story posted on Potions and Snitches as well as the other sites it's on. And
I really, seriously
did not have time because people who haven't done it maybe can't understand that uploading 97 different chapters is no joke. I mean, it is really time consuming. And Kira did it for me. She loaded the whole story onto a third site, and we should all give her a round of applause.
Yay, Kira!
That was really helpful. It really was. No, you don't understand. It was.
That is the most like edited current version, isn't it?
Yes, it is. If you go to Potions and Snitches, that is the closest version to what I actually have on my own computer. I'm planning to replace the chapters on Skyhawk with my new ones. And, you know, the kinds of things that change, it's some word choices here and there and a few typos that have been pointed out to me. It's nothing substantial really changes. But
Draco
I'm planning to put an improved, no, yeah, right. Put an improved version up there when I can, because I have a better version here, because I edit the files as I find typos and things. But, just uploading is so time consuming that I haven't got to it.
Well, I just want to close up by just saying too that, you find with a lot of authors that, you know, I think Lady Chi said this sometimes, like, you know, Jen will ask, you know, how does this character get from here to there, you know, in this amount? And she's looking into, like, the specifics of how scenes work and where people are standing. And a lot of authors' response is, I don't know.
You have to go in the bathroom sometime.
That's not the point. Yeah, like, a lot of authors will respond, don't worry about that. That's not important. That's not important. One thing I've noticed in the way you write is that, like, even tonight, you're saying, you know, if you remember way back in chapter one, here's what was happening in that scene. And here was the character's motivation. I mean, you have obviously a very detailed knowledge of this universe and why it works and how it works and just how it all fits. Like, you just went on, you know, about, you know, Draco Malfoy's, you know, financial status and, you know, all these agreements. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot.
Because I had to think that all through in detail to make sure there weren't plot holes.
Exactly.
Because Merkur and I had talked about that how are we going to have his money disappear? What about the shirt he gave Harry, which we need later?
Right. Yeah, so I mean, I guess I'm going for is a lot of authors probably would gloss over that and just try and fudge things to make it work and make it exciting and, you know, maybe even have Dracula, you know, Malfoy drop out of the ceiling and land on people. So obviously, you know, you put a lot of effort into that to make the world seem real. And, you know, we've said before, you know, some people will read this and do the preconceptions. They just can't do it. Some people will read it like me and give it a chance and will really find something in it. You know, that changes the way they think about the characters. And no one can say it's not well thought out, and no one can say that you didn't really put your heart and soul into this fic. So I just want, as a reader who, you know, gave it the chance not knowing if you'd like it, I really enjoyed it. I'm going to keep reading, and thanks.
Oh, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Okay. Yeah, and you're right. I did put my heart and soul into it. It feels like a real world to me, you know? And it's a world I enjoy spending time in.
So. It's a world that Jen very much wants to live in, and she can't find the entrance.
Me too.
Well, I don't think Jen is alone there. You know, I might go through a doorway if I could find one too, so.
And Jen's got a birthday coming up, and Jen's had a tough month. So the next chapter that comes up, you can arrange for Draco to be wearing something leather. That'd be super good.
I know that's on Jen's list, like, yeah.
Oh, God. Well, I'm going to go crawl under a rock.
Okay, I think we're going to get out of here for the evening. Aspen, thanks so much for doing this. I know you said you were a newbie at this, but you did great at it, and I wish you could have gone on for 7 hours because I think we scratched the surface. But it's been a really great time, and I hope we get to talk to you again soon.
Okay, thanks for inviting me on. I thought it was great.
Absolutely.
We'll and talk good to talk to all of you again.
Not a problem.
And definitely.
Not a problem. So with that, we'll see everyone. We'll see you probably in about, when are we going to see you? Maybe in about a week or two. Check the schedule on the forum, and we're going to be starting the Shoebox Project next. And have a great night, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Good night.
Bye.
Night.
I love you. Hi, this is Kelly, a.k.a. Rosworms from the forum. I just wanted to talk about Harry's self-injury in the last couple chapters, or a few chapters of the A Year Like None Other. The first couple times I read it, I felt that Aspen had ended it way too cleanly. Like, because for me, it's been like an ongoing problem for about 10 years, and I couldn't imagine anyone just like going to their parents. But, I think that because of the way that Severus is handling Harry, because of Harry's, like, screwed-up past, I mean, most teenagers, the parents at this age would be encouraging independence and saying you need to learn how to deal with this on your own. But because of Harry's so self-reliant past, Severus is always encouraging him. You know, I want you to come to me. I'm always here for you. You can come to me with anything. And he's trying to get Harry to depend more on other people. And I think that's probably one of the reasons that Harry was able to go to Severus. Because otherwise, I think if Severus had been handling Harry like any other parent would, he probably never would have gone to Severus, and this probably would have gone on longer. But because of the way it was handled, it was able to be handled a little more cleanly, and, you know, telling his father about his self-injury and his behavior and his thoughts. So if anyone, you know, thinks that it ended it way too cleanly and that it never ends that quickly, I just think that's probably one of the reasons why I did. It probably came out sounding a little jumbled because I was kind of nervous, but whatever. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Lady Chi, say hi to Noah.
Chi, or Noah, say hi.
Hi.
Hi, say hi, Chi.
Hi, Chi.
Good job.
Hi, Noah.
Say hi, Huggles.
How are you today?
Can you say, hi, Huggles?
Hi, Huggles.
Can you say, Huggles?
Give him a cookie. Give him a cookie.
I tried that earlier. It wasn't working. Come here. Say, Huggles.
Huggles.
Yeah, that was it. Good job.
What house is he in? I want to give points.
He's a Gryffindor.
He's a Slytherin.
No.
Yeah, Jen's like half Gryffindor last week.
The next week is going to be oodles and oodles of fun.
You're going to be fun. You're going to be great during the Chamber of Secrets commentary. I can tell you right. Chris Columbus should die. All right, thank you, Lady Chi. We're going to turn off microphone 4. Okay, Mercady, every time I try and say your name, I sound like I don't know what to call you. It sounds like I'm referring to a car brand.
I have to say how strange this experience feels for me, because I have been like following Aspen and Mert, like, and their friendship, and like they're writing this story for like, I don't know, like how
Jen,
many years.
Jen, would you like to giggle before we start?
I think it's like so, it's so surreal. Okay, I'm done.
You're done.
Okay, Jen.
All right, here.
We need to giggle.